I'm very pleased to have Ernie Detour with us today. Good morning, Ernie.
Good morning, Larry.
Nice to have you here. Ernie and I, we were talking earlier in the week. This is Inclusive Innovation Week, and it's been celebrated all throughout Pittsburgh. And Ernie has been involved in play aspects of this. And Ernie, for years, has been a professional educator, is a teacher at Edinburgh, and also as a consultant and as a classroom teacher. And he's going to be speaking later today at the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh, along with Jesse Schell from Schell Games, about imaginative play and why that's important to the future of innovation. And tell me a little bit about that subject and what research is showing.
All right, so imaginative play is the idea that through children's play, they can discover, find out what their curiosities may lead them to. They can problem solve a number of things, but it's looking at play with materials, often open-ended materials, whereby there's no right or wrong way to play with them and no product that comes out of that particular play. But the idea that they're experimenting with real-life experiences, fantasy experiences, and things that sometimes emotionally impact them.
And, you know, I think a good example, you know, folks our age, you know, when I was growing up, when you got Legos, they didn't come in a kit to build a specific item. You just got a big box of building blocks. In fact, you didn't just get Legos. There were all sorts of systems and things. And I think all of us can relate to giving a gift to a child and discovering that the child actually has more engagement with the box it came in yes. Because it's more open-ended and you can make it anything you want it to be. And I would imagine that's a good analogy to what creative and imaginative play can be.
That's a perfect analogy, Larry. Thank you. Yes, the idea that there's no prescriptive way of doing something. And when you look at creativity in general, it really involves like an out-of-the-box way of looking at things. And so your analogy as a step-by-step process of building this Lego model is actually right. So, but you can also look at when you talk about divergent thinking, which is thinking outside the box, you have to also consider convergent thinking because the information that you already know is very important. How to refine it, improve it, change something is also a part of that.
Yeah, I think we emphasize conformance to processes and following steps. We talk about that a lot in academic subjects and things that are important to know. But as life, maybe it's technology, maybe it's simply as the pace of life goes quicker and quicker, we might not think as much about things that you don't accomplish by steps, but rather you ponder and reflect on what is before you and decide what you're going to do with it. And that's really where true creativity comes from.
Yes. So if I might cite a research study, so in 2010, Merriman and Bronson came up with the idea that students in the United States, children in the United States, are really, really in a creativity crisis. One of the long-term barometers of that was a psychologist named Schwerenrock, who did testing on children and asked them questions like, use the example of, here's a fire truck. How can you make this fire truck better and more fun to play with? Kids in the 1950s would come up with 10, 15, 20 ideas. After 1990, it seemed like there was a drop in divergent thinking as far as alternative uses, how to make things better, and things of that nature. So from 1990 to the present, there has been a decline in children's creativity, according to the test that he used.
That is a crisis because in the working world, as well as really just the entire world, creativity is really going to be needed to solve a lot of problems. And as things like robotic manufacturing and so many of the rote, repetitive aspects of work are going to be done by fewer human beings. So for people to be happy and employed and engaged in life, they're really going to need to be able to be creative, at least I would think.
Yes. And one of the follow-up studies to the Merriman and Bronson report was this Dr. Kim from William & Mary College studied 300,000 of these testees and followed up on their adult life and their accomplishments. And it turns out that children who scored high on these creativity tests were three times more likely to be creative as adults. So if you look at it in terms of education, you know, in the U.S., we follow a standardized curriculum, and there's not often a lot of times to deviate from that. Okay, so this rote approach to learning is one thing, and important in and of itself. The other thing is, though, we need to give kids opportunities for them to find out the answers themselves, and that is where the divergent thinking comes in.
I can remember when I was in my early 20s with an engineering background working for a consulting engineering company, and my time was charged by the hour. And I can remember I had so many hours to solve a particular problem for a client. And I can remember being very frustrated because I knew how to solve it. I mean, I had a solution already in mind, but I really wanted to take some time to think about whether there might be a better one. And I felt very constrained because I simply did not have the time. It actually would have been risky for me to do that. And I wonder if parents or teachers think that unstructured play or loose parts play, as you're going to be calling it today, right, if they worry that that can be risky.
Yeah, I think there's a concern because it's not measurable. You know, you cannot see the results of open-ended play with open-ended materials unless you're in involved. And as a parent, either as an observer or a player themselves, you know, if they're there, they can see decision-making as it's coming or as it's arising through the play. I think I need to change this because. We better do this because. And so the language aspect of that is really, really very telling.
Now, today, will you be giving some tips to parents? And you'll have some kids, too, here at the Children's Museum. Will you be talking a little bit about how to make open-ended play a reality in your home?
Yes. So one of the things, I've even created a program here at the Children's Museum called The Importance of Time, Space, and Materials. So you can't be creative in a time crunch. You know, so the idea when kids need time to develop their ideas, they need the space to do it. If they need to build Legos or blocks, they need a larger space to do that. And then the materials are one thing I really like to emphasize, that open-ended materials are available in things like cereal boxes and milk cartons, you know, so you don't have to go out and buy a box of Legos that costs $18.95, not for 40 of them, you know, but you can build things with the materials that you have right in your homes.
Do you think that, I don't want to put you on the spot, mm-hmm. but you just caused me to have a bit of an epiphany. Do you think that the commercialization and marketing of toys and such a specific variants of toys has led to a pressure on families to buy these toys as opposed to just saying, hey, here's some blocks, build something out of these? Is that something that maybe is causing the shift that we've seen over the past 30 or 40 years?
Yeah, I'd say the commercialization of toys and even foods that children need to eat, there's pressure put on parents, and while children are being drawn into this, I need this, I need this, I need this. I liked your analogy earlier that they got the toy and then played with the box afterwards. I've experienced that a million times myself. But, maybe like a box of empty cereal boxes would not be the same as a $100 set of something. So there's pressure for acceptance. But I also think that adults can, when they play with kids, say, hey, let's pretend that these are. And what are your ideas on how we can set up this city of blocks, or how can we connect these cereal boxes so that they don't fall? Because they don't really stick together like other blocks do. So I would say that their encouragement and involvement when children ask them to, and when children don't ask them to, just sit there and listen to all the riches that are going on in this kind of play.
Now, there's a website. It's p21.org/our-work/p21-framework that talks about some of these concepts. And I know that's a mouthful. I'll put a link up on our Facebook page. Although I'm sure if you Google Loose Parts Playground, Pittsburgh, perhaps you'll find out a little bit about what Ernie's going to be talking about later today. Our time is just about up. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? I hope people will come to hear you at 1 today talking about that. It's here at the Children's Museum in our theater, and it should be a great conversation. You'll have some examples, and folks can get some tips from you.
Yes. So if I can just add one thing, that the Skills for the 21st Century Learner really emphasize the need for creativity to reach innovation. And a lot of the top companies like IBM and such are looking at this skill as a leadership competency. So it's something that needs to be developed from childhood and to continue to be developed through children's adult stages.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. I hope the talk goes well. And we should keep in touch. I just think there are a lot of folks that are coping with what is play today.
Right.
And while you don't want to overanalyze it, that in fact we're talking about trying not to do that so much, it is important to recognize that loose, open-ended play is so important. Thanks, Ernie.
Oh, you're very welcome there. Thank you for having me.